NBC News Radio. I'm Mike Vaccara at the White House. Daylight will allow authorities in northwest Oklahoma to get a better look at the damage from a tornado that killed five people and left several injured. The tornado hit just after midnight. This survivor credits her husband for helping shield her from a twister that tore through the town of Woodward.
He's my hero. He just crawled right over the floor. He was getting barraged by glass and furniture and glass, and he just crawled over on top of me, pushed me up against the wall, and just laid on top of me. I probably would have been hurt really bad if he hadn't have done that.
Forecasters say the Midwest and plains could once again see deadly storms today. President Obama wraps up his visit to the Summit of the Americas with a news conference today in Colombia. His message may be blurred by scandal involving claims that Secret Service and military personnel visited prostitutes during the trip. The FDA is investigating a salmonella outbreak tied to tainted yellowfin tuna. This is NBC News Radio. NATO forces say several locations came under attack today in Afghanistan's capital. The Taliban is claiming responsibility. NBC News producer Soel Udin reports the assaults took place in seven different places.
Our contacts, who are actually close to the scene and on the ground, told us that these places included the U.S. and U.K. embassy compounds, a four-star hotel used by Westerners, and definitely a supermarket.
There are reports of wounded people, but no deaths have been confirmed. Six United Nations observers are expected to arrive in Syria today amid reports of more shelling by government troops. The first batch of observers took off soon after the UN Security Council in New York voted yesterday to authorize an advance team to help maintain Syria's shaky ceasefire. Pope Benedict XVI has asked for prayers and for the strength to carry on as he marks his seventh anniversary as Pope this week. Benedict made the comments to thousands of people gathered in St. Peter's Square. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Mike Vaccara, NBC News Radio.
At Advance Auto Parts, we don't do anything just part way. We go full throttle. We don't just sell you parts. No, we work to bring you deals on parts. Like right now, when you buy any Autolite spark plug wires, we'll give you a set of Autolite Platinum spark plugs valued up to $24 free. At Advance, we get you the parts you need fast. And then sometimes we give you free stuff. As if fast wasn't sweet enough. Service is our best part.
Advance Auto Parts.
See store for details.
Every so often, the stars are in perfect alignment, and during the Lincoln Certified Pre-Owned Sales Event, now is that perfect moment. For a limited time, get 0.9% APR on the Certified Pre-Owned Lincoln of your choice, which comes with the confidence of our 6-year, 100,000-mile comprehensive warranty. The Lincoln Certified Pre-Owned Sales Event, exclusively at your Lincoln dealer. APR varies by term. Not all buyers will qualify for Lincoln Automotive Financial Services Limited Term Financing. Take delivery from dealer stock by 4/30/12. See dealer for qualifications, limited warranty.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, John Agri, who is president and CEO of a new startup called BizGravity, an online auction marketplace for executives. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Hey, welcome to Best Buy. May I help you?
Yeah, my car's entertainment system just isn't cutting it.
Easy answer. Get an HD radio receiver, 100% free digital sound, digital traffic, and great music choices from your local HD2, HD3 radio stations.
Well, what brands do you have?
Best Buy has new expanded HD radio inventory. Alpine, Kenwood, Pioneer, JVC, with prices as low as $120.
Wow, an HD radio digital entertainment center? Show me the way. HD radio. More radio, more value.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview.
Yeah.
And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and I'm joined by my co-host, Don D. Saunders of Clifton Larson Allen. We've got a fantastic lineup of guests for you today, including Lonnie Taylor, Managing Director of Diversified Search, Larry Besterman, President and CEO of TWD & Associates, Tom Shoemaker, President and Chief Operating Officer of Facile Incorporated, and Phil Panzarella, Founder, President, and CEO of CPS Professional Services. So let's get started. I'd like to introduce to you our first guest today, Lonnie Taylor. Lonnie's the Managing Director of Diversified Search. So Lonnie, welcome to the show, and tell us, what is Diversified Search?
Sure. Diversified Search is one of the top 10 major executive search firms in the country, where we specialize in recruiting senior level talent to serve in C-suite positions, both in the private sector as well as the public sector.
Well, you said you're a best kept secret. What does that mean?
Well, as a top 10 search firm, we perhaps are not the kind of household names that you hear of some of the other major search firms, but we are a household name in the context of our clients who have used us on a consistent basis, where we have 86% of our business is repeat business.
How big or small by whatever measure you want to use?
Well, in terms of employees, we have more than 100. We also are part of an international alliance where we're in 28 countries around the world. So we're of significant size.
The glass ceiling, quote unquote, the glass ceiling was one of the impetuses for starting this company. What does that mean?
Well, 37 years ago, our founder, Judy Von Seldenick, realized that there was a very difficult situation for women to really serve in senior-level positions in corporate America, and she made a decision that she was going to do something about it. And 37 years later, she's had a very significant impact directly as well as through the team that she has assembled to really make a difference in terms of those opportunities.
So if there was a cultural characteristic that defines your firm, what is it?
It's in one word, customization. We customize everything that we do, from our recruitment to our consulting services to directly to the needs of our clients.
You also mentioned diversity in the green room. What does that have to do with your firm, and how's it related to customization?
Well, we are the number one diversity search firm in the country, and that is over 90% of those that we place, the searches that we conduct, consist of individuals that have diverse background, including racial and ethnic diversity.
Well, when most people, I think of diversity, they think of racial diversity. What other type of diversity are you talking about?
Oh, diversity in culture, diversity in interests, diversity in backgrounds. And an example could be someone who has a very specialized expertise in the area of financial services.
You bring a lot of diversity to the table in that you are a rare breed. You're a native Washingtonian. Is that right?
That's correct. I'm very proud of it.
Tell us about growing up years ago in D.C.
Well, it was a very different Washington, D.C. than it is today. Today we have a lot of gentrification going on. But well, we come from a very humble backgrounds in that my mother, who was a widow at a young age with 11 kids, raised us in Washington, D.C., in some very tough surroundings, and we were able to learn to thrive and survive.
Lonnie, you had mentioned something in the green room about education and your commitment to that and what you got out of it. Can you tell us about that?
Well, growing up in Washington, D.C., and attending the Washington, D.C. public schools could have been characterized as a challenge back then. We had some very dedicated teachers, and in terms of the level of the substance of the education, it would vary. But one of the things that I learned early on is that you really sort of take out of the education what you put into it, and that is the effort that you make to learn. And to strive in that environment can make all the difference in terms of long-term education.
So where did you end up for higher education?
Well, I ended up staying in Washington, D.C. I joke and I say I've never left the Beltway or gone outside the Beltway, and that I attended George Washington University with a business degree, and then later Georgetown University, where I earned my law degree.
So you were the middle child of 11 children. Your father died when your youngest sibling was 6 months old.
Yes, that's right.
And you went to Georgetown and GW with a business degree and a law degree.
Yes.
Your mom must have played an important role in that. How so?
Well, she not only did she make it possible to a certain extent financially, but just in terms of being an inspiration, because my mother went back and continued her education after having 11 kids and finished the undergrad in graduate school. And so it really inspired us to do a lot, because she was able to do so not only while she was working and raising the kids, but also tending to her education.
Give us a little more of an example of what life was like back then. How big or small was your house? What was it like?
Well, we were in an apartment, a 3-bedroom apartment. And we learned to be dependent on each other. We became very close to each other, the 11 kids. And so we never were without friends, because we were friends to each other.
11 children with 3 bedrooms.
Yes.
A lot of fighting, or did you all get along beautifully?
We did both.
Was that a benefit, or was it a negative?
It really sort of emphasized the common characteristics that we have, and the fact that we could learn to depend on each other and understand each other and learn to work with each other. So it was an extreme benefit that later proved to be helpful in the context of the business world for me.
You talked about your mom being instrumental in helping you get your education, but you and your siblings were instrumental in her getting her education. How did that work?
Well, since my mother continued her education after she had the young kids, we were able to help with family chores, but also from time to time when she was attending school, we could help her directly. I remember distinctly going to the library and waiting for her to get out of class, and also driving her to postgraduate school.
Did you see your mom graduate?
Oh, yes.
What did that feel like?
Well, graduation ceremony is just often a touching ceremony to begin with, but to know that your mother actually has done that after overcoming such obstacles made a huge, huge difference, and impactful not only for me then, but in terms of passing it down to my kids.
You mentioned something about serving your community and commitment to young people. You have a young person here in the studio today. Can you tell us about that?
Well, yeah, I am real privileged to have my nephew here, Joshua Taylor. And Joshua is getting to experience some of the things that I do. He's with us for a few days. And it's reflective of the emphasis that we have on familial relations and to really teach our young people early on the skills that are necessary to thrive and survive.
Somebody did that for you. His first name is Jacob. Tell us about Jacob Javits and his role in your life.
Well, Jacob Javits was a tremendous mentor for me, and he made the difference at a very early age. I was 16 years old and a junior in high school, and through a competition was able to gain an internship in his office at that early age. And from there, he actually offered me employment while I was attending George Washington University, and that made all the difference in establishing my career in government relations.
Who is Jacob Javits?
Jacob Javits was one of the longest-serving United States senators from New York. He was often referred to as the Senate's lawyer because of his legal acumen and his facility for the legislative process.
So what did he see in you when you were 16 years old?
Well, I think back then, at least initially, he thought that the personality was appealing. More importantly, he wanted to lend a hand and help to make a difference in the lives of some of the people in Washington, D.C.
Okay, so in the green room when I asked you that question, you gave us a direct quote. So I'm going to ask you to quote Mr. Javits. What did he say to you when you won the internship?
Well, he liked my personality, and he thought that it would be good to have me on his team.
Well, Lonnie's blushing right now, folks. You can't see it on the radio. Mr. Javits was not the only person to see something in you. You are a presidential, or were a presidential appointee, if I'm not mistaken. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I had the privilege of serving in the administration of President George Bush, the father. And did so as the Associate Administrator of the General Services Administration, which is the government's contracting agency. with a wonderful panoply of oversight issues and matters that reside with that agency. So it gave me some practical experience in terms of learning government and learning regulations, and that experience continues to serve me today.
So when you're a presidential appointee, does that mean the president himself walks up to you and does something to you, or how does that work?
Well, in this case, it was somewhat that, because my wife was his deputy press secretary. So he certainly knew our family, and my wife was the first to write a memoir about her experience at the White House under President Bush.
What is that like, working for a president or President Bush?
Well, I've only worked for one president, and I say that it was a wonderful, outstanding experience. He's such a tremendous man, very principled, the highest ethics, and certainly exceptional intelligence, but someone who's very capable and who took the role of being a leader extremely serious and setting the pace for all of us in the administration.
What is unique about you? You've held lots of positions in your life. What's unique about working for a president?
It's the fact that that you have a special calling. Being of service to the public, being a civil servant, does matter, and it makes a huge difference. And there's a lot of responsibility associated with oversight of financial matters of that level, of that significance, as well as the fact that the policy that you work on, that you impact, can make a difference in so many people's lives across the country, if not in the world.
What did your mom think of your success?
Well, I think my mother is continues to be very proud of me and of her 10 other children. I should mention that she those are just my biological brothers and sisters, but my mother became a foster mom after she retired, and she ended up falling in love with three of her foster kids, and she adopted three girls as well.
That is amazing. Would you please give us the web address, Lonnie, for Diversified Search?
Sure. It's www.divsearch.com.
Fantastic. We've been speaking with Lonnie Taylor, Managing Director of Diversified Search. I'd like to thank my co-host, Andy Saunders of Clifton Larson Allen, for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders like Lonnie. And we will be right back in just a moment after this important business spotlight. This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your Business Spotlight. Today's guest is
Amanda Teedy.
And Amanda, who are you with?
I'm with Cassidy Turley, and I represent tenants on their commercial real estate needs.
But that's not what you're here to talk about today, is it?
No, it's not.
What are you here to talk about?
I'm here to talk about the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and their Man and Woman of the Year campaign for 2012.
Give us the organization's name again.
It's the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society.
And what is that?
So this is an organization that helps families and doctors. Basically, they're raising a lot of money and resources in order to help these people who are finding out that they have been impacted by these terrible blood diseases.
And they have nominated you for what?
For the 2012 Woman of the Year.
Wow, congratulations. What does that mean?
Basically, it means this is in relationship to the National Capital Chapter, and it's basically a massive fundraising campaign. So I'm spending the next 10 weeks trying to raise as much money as we possibly can, and we have a pretty lofty goal of $100,000.
What inspired you to accept this nomination?
You know, there were a few things that really hit home for me. There was a blog going on late last year. It was the Patrick Kelly blog, and he was a guy who was, you know, 1 year ahead of me at JMU. He was 34, and he passed away. He lost his battle from lymphoma, brain tumor, and he left behind his wife and his 2-year-old daughter, and it was pretty heart-wrenching.
You mentioned you had a goal. What's the goal?
The goal is $100,000.
By when?
By June 16th.
How are you going to achieve that?
Fortunately, I've organized an amazing team of people. We've got this great board who they're all, you know, business leaders and phenomenal people, and they're helping us get there. We've got several ways to do it. We've got a very great way to do it with this BizGravity website, bizgravity.com, where we're able to auction off CEOs.
So what's the web address for us to find you?
One way to find me is by that one. It's BizGravity, GRAVITY.com.
Fantastic. We've been speaking with Amanda Teedy, who is being nominated as Woman of the Year for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and that was your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dondi Saunders, of Clifton Larson Allen. And we are thrilled to introduce to you our next guest. His name is Larry Besterman. Larry is the president and CEO of TWD and Associates. So, Larry, thanks for being with us on the show today, and tell us, what is TWD and Associates?
TWD is a systems integration company. We provide communication and collaboration solutions principally for federal government customers.
Well, what does systems integration mean? And give it to us in plain English.
Well, we take components, hardware and software components, okay, and we integrate them into something that functions and solves a problem of some sort. So a phone system is an example.
Got it. You do a lot of work with video conference equipment. Tell us a little bit about that, Nick. Who do you do this work for?
We do it for a variety of government agencies, such as the Navy, Homeland Security, and other executive-level agencies of the federal government.
How big or how small is TWD?
We are 270 employees, and we do about $55 million a year in business. Okay.
And you've been there how long?
I have been there for 19 years.
Wow. Why? What does that say about you? In an age where lots of people switch jobs frequently, what does that say about you?
It says that TWD has been a great place to work, and I've had great opportunities there, and I've tried to take advantage of them and do good things for our employees and at the same time benefit myself.
There's something in particular that you've done for the employees several years ago. What was that?
We did a employee buyout of the founder in 2003. The founder had started an employee ownership plan, and we used that to purchase a majority interest.
And so that means what to any given individual employee?
It means that each employee is an owner of stock of TWD and Associates and shares in the success of the company. Each and every year by an allocation of stock and also by profit sharing.
We're going to talk more about that a little bit later in the interview. Tell us where you're from.
I'm from New Jersey. I was born in Philadelphia and raised in South Jersey.
And what was it like growing up in South Jersey?
It was great, actually. I had a great childhood, and we weren't well off, but we were a middle-class family, and there was five of us, and we were reasonably close as a family and got along, and it was a good time.
So people are dying to know what exit.
We were right off exit 5 on the turnpike.
Got it. Tell us about your dad.
Well, my father was a man of his era. He was a World War II veteran, and World War II veteran men were strong and did for their family and provided, but they weren't very communicative or affectionate. And but he was strict, and he let you know when you messed up.
Yeah. You mentioned in the green room that, and I quote, he had an interesting way of helping you when you needed it. And you didn't mean interesting in a bad way. Give us an example.
He didn't lecture, and he didn't tell you a lot about the facts of life, but in moments you needed it, he really came through for you. So one time in particular, I was playing with friends down the street, and we were playing a game, a sports game of some sort, and I was upset about the outcome, and I was, in fact, crying and coming back up towards the house, and I'm very upset and really feeling miserable, and he was mowing the grass, and he was going back and forth, and he didn't say a word to me. He just waved me over towards him, and he put me in front of him, and we mowed the lawn together, and I calmed down, and it was just terrific. I just felt very close to him in that moment. It was just exactly what I needed at that moment in time.
Larry, speaking of some kind of sports, tell us what you did in junior high school that led you on to college.
I got involved in gymnastics when I was in junior high school, and I did that principally, well, I liked it, but I did it principally because my family didn't have the money to send me to college, and I was hoping one way or the other that gymnastics would lead to a way of getting to college. And I was at a meet when I was a junior, and after the meet, the assistant coach of the gymnastics team from the U.S. Military Academy approached me and asked me if I'd be interested in going there and doing gymnastics.
Some people look for signs to know whether they've made the right decision. You had a sign, did you not?
Well, I went home after the meet, and I told my parents were in the living room, and I told them what had happened, and my father lit up. I mean, this expression on his face was like, this is the most wonderful thing that could happen to you. And I didn't know a lot about West Point, but at that moment, because of his reaction, I knew that's what I had to do.
Well, what is a plebe?
Freshmen at military academies are called plebes. There's actually a nickname for each year, but plebes are the freshmen, and they're under a lot of duress, and there's a lot of stress put on plebes to see if they are able to adjust to military life.
Can you give us an example of some stress you were under?
Well, you have a lot of additional duties. It's not just going to school. You have to deliver mail. You have to pick up laundry. You have to clean barracks. You have to you get yelled at all the time. There's mandatory knowledge that you have to know, and any upperclassman can ask it, and you have to be able to answer with the right answer to the question. So there's so it requires a lot of learning how to work with your classmates to help each other.
After we learned this about you in the green room, we had an interesting connection. Can you tell us about that?
Well, one of the other guests is named Phil Panzarella, and Phil and I are not only both went to West Point, and not only from the same class year, we were in the same company, and as freshmen, and as freshmen, you, like I said, you develop a closer bond with your classmates in your company than almost anyone else.
So when you saw Phil in the green room, and you were not expecting him, what did it feel like to see somebody from the old company?
It's a feeling of comfort, familiarity. You know this person. You know what they've been through. You share these common experiences, and even if you're not close many years later, that relationship and bond is still there.
Did your friends that went to party you at some other college, did they think you were crazy going through all those difficulties and stresses at the West Point Academy?
Well, my funny thing about that is my very best friend from high school also went to West Point, so he certainly understood. And one of my other good friends went to the Naval Academy, so it was something that was in the culture of the area where I grew up.
Can we connect this back to your dad after you graduated from West Point? What was that like for him?
Well, he was extremely proud of the fact that I had made it through. He had warned me that it was going to be tough, and I think, frankly, he wasn't sure I was going to be able to make it through, but he was proud of that.
So did he have any of those, that's my boy, moments, either when you graduated or thereafter?
He wasn't demonstrative like that, so if he did, he didn't show me.
What's the hardest thing you've ever had to do?
Well, in my position, the hardest thing that I have to do is when I have to terminate an employee. And it doesn't matter how many times you do that, it gets harder every time you have to do it.
It doesn't get easier? You don't get used to it?
No, you don't get used to it. Because as you advance in your career and you become more senior, the people who work for you are also more senior. And,
yeah.
You know, if you have to let go somebody who's in their 20s, they're going to find another job. Their life is ahead of them. But if you have to let go somebody who's in their 50s, they may never get another job. That's what you have to wrestle with.
Yeah. You mentioned that you're very interested in leadership, especially coming out of West Point. What makes West Point leadership so different or unique? What's the big deal?
It's very different to lead a company and try to drive it to profits and success than it is to lead young men and women into a life-threatening situation.
Give us an example of when you had to do that.
Well, I was fortunate that I never had to go to combat, so I don't have any specific examples of leading people. But I have had to lead people into dangerous situations. I went to various Army training exercises and jungle school where there are, in fact, life and death situations that you face.
You had mentioned that leading an employee-owned company has its own sort of challenges. Is this somewhat relating to that?
It's a little bit different. Leading an employee-owned company has challenges in that you communicate to your employees that because they're owners of the business, that they have a stake in the business, and therefore they feel empowered to question leadership's decisions. So you have need for disclosure, communication, and transparency in an employee-owned company that other privately-owned companies don't have, and that can be a challenge.
In what way have you changed as a leader since the company became employee-owned?
I think I'm more focused on how to create the right incentive structure. How do you create incentives that actually get the behavior you're looking for out of your employees? So whether it's individual benefits, group benefits, shared amongst the whole company, or structured for you as an individual, those are what you have to deal with and what I've probably learned the most about since being in this position.
You mentioned that your dad wasn't sure that you'd get through West Point, and now you're the president and CEO of a company that's got 270 employees. What does your dad think about you now?
Well, unfortunately, he's passed, so he doesn't know that. But I know that he would be very proud of the things that I've accomplished.
Yeah. Would you give us the web address, please, for TWD and Associates?
It is www.twd.com.
TWD.com. Simple. Thank you. We've been speaking with Larry Besterman. Larry is the president and CEO of TWD and Associates. I'd like to thank my co-host, Dondi Saunders of CLA, Clifton Larson Allen, for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders like Larry. And we will be right back in just a moment after this important business spotlight. This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is
Mike Harden.
Mike, who are you with?
I'm with Vistage International.
What is Vistage?
Vistage is by far the largest and probably the most prestigious organization of CEOs in the world. We have about 15,000 members in 16 different countries.
And what does Vistage do?
Vistage is there specifically to help people get better at what they do at the CEO level. Our goal is to help CEOs become better decision makers, to grow their businesses, to do more with what they've got.
And what do you do at Vistage?
Well, I'm a chair with Vistage, and a chair simply means that I chair a local group of chief executive officers, and I coach each of those people individually and try to make myself available to help them with their business needs.
Why is coaching so important to a CEO? Don't they have it all figured out?
I wish they did. I'd been a CEO myself for a long time, and I wish I'd had a coach. There's just too much going on in today's world. You're being pulled in all kinds of different directions. You're making decisions every day, and it's just so isolated for some people to have to make those decisions without the ability to go to other people.
There's a plethora of coaches out there. Why are you a fantastic CEO coach? Why you?
Well, I would say that what I do is I help good CEOs become great CEOs, and what I do with that is I have certain axioms of business that I try to stress, and one of the first ones is that you deserve the people that you hire and keep.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, if you have A players on your staff, they're going to do a great job for you, and you deserve to have them. If you have B players, well, then you deserve to have B players.
So you're looking for what type of person?
I look for CEOs who are lifelong learners who want to be better at what they do and need someone like me to help them get there.
How do we find you, Mike?
Well, I have a blog, and most CEOs look at it. It's called CEOSuccessCoach.com.
We've been speaking with Mike Harden of Vistage and CEOSuccessCoach.com. This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and that was your business spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions. I'm joined by my co-host, Dondi Saunders, of CLA, Clifton Larson Allen. And we are thrilled to introduce to you our next guest. His name is Tom Shoemaker. Tom's the President and Chief Operating Officer of Facile Incorporated. So, Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And tell us, what is Facile?
Facile is an award-winning federal government contractor. We have contracts with several agencies, both civilian and defense, and we work exclusively on federal government contracts, no state and local contracts, and we are headquartered here in Arlington, Virginia.
You do lots of different types of work, but tell us what you're doing, for example, with the Department of Agriculture.
The Department of Agriculture, we have a software development contract where we are building a application that modernizes the business applications that they use to provide landowners the ability to get the most out of their natural resources.
So a landowner would be a farmer, or who exactly?
Could be a farmer. Anyone who owns a tract of land and is looking to try to do the best they can with the natural resources on that land.
That's important work. How big or small is Facile?
Facile is about 450 employees. across 14 states in 20 cities.
And the company was founded when?
In 2001.
Okay. How do you spell Facile?
Facile is spelled with P-H-A-C-I-L.
Is there a story behind the name?
The name actually in Spanish means easy, but in Spanish it begins with an F, but the web address had already been taken.
Got it. Okay. Well, thank you for explaining that. You have been the president and chief operating officer for a year and a half. Why you?
Well, I think that you know, in any position, many good and great people can satisfy that position. But I've had a relationship with the founder, Mr. Raf Collado, as well as his partner, Mrs. Sasha Wernell. Raf and I, our relationship has gone back 40 years from the time that we were growing up together. And I've worked with him for several of those years in the past. And this is the longest period where I've been able to do that. And it's been a great time.
Have you ever run a company for Raf before?
I've run companies, but never for Raf, no.
Yeah.
You had mentioned in the green room that this was the longest cup of coffee with a childhood friend. Can you expand on that?
Sure. One of the things growing up that my parents and the people who affected my growing years were the relationships were very important. And many of the relationships I've had growing up have been exceedingly important, and I keep them. And Raf is one of the most important ones, and we've been friends and colleagues for 40 years. And so being able to work with your friends is one of the most satisfying things in business.
Is it easier or harder to work and to run a company for a childhood friend? More pressure, less pressure?
I think it's harder. I think it's harder because not only do you want to do well, which you always do because you have that internal drive, but the loyalty and the relationship you have with your friend, you don't want to disappoint them.
When the phone call came from Raf and you had the cup of coffee, was this a no-brainer, yes, absolutely, or did you have to think about it?
Absolutely no-brainer.
Wow. Wow. What was it that you guys did growing up that bonded you so close and forged the relationship? Tell us about growing up.
I grew up in New York City, about 10 minutes from Yankee Stadium. It was a rough neighborhood in the 60s. And Raf's family, his three brothers, himself, my family, my two brothers, families were close. I knew his mother and father very well. He knew mine very well. And there was a tremendous mutual respect. And so being able to keep that relationship over the years was relatively easy, not only with him, but with his brothers and with his parents.
So what are some of the things you guys used to do together 10 minutes from Yankee Stadium?
Well, I don't know that I can talk about all of them.
Just give us a few.
Well, I can recall one evening that we were both in college, and I had a particular math problem that was vexing, and we were just talking one day on the phone. He says, "My dad is great at that. Why don't you come over?" And I had never thought of his dad in that way. His dad, who was a wonderful man, an astounding person, he was always Mr. Collado, who you respected, and went over to his house that day and to make a long story short, went into the basement, and he taught me how to do mathematical proofs in a half hour, much more easily
wow.
explained than my professors did. Wow. So
well,
I never forgot that.
Well, why is that so meaningful to you?
Because I think that greatness is around you if you just look for it. It's around you in the people that you see. And you can't sell people short just because you happen to know them when you're, you know, a child.
Taking that back to your company, you said you had a tenant called Ferocious Execution.
Yes.
Can you tell us more about that?
It's all about customer service. You know, government contracting is a fiercely competitive business. And the way we try to attack it is very simple. It gets down to basics. Is if I can serve customers the very best that I can develop a reputation in serving customers, that will be known. And that is something that we honed working in the commercial marketplace and wanted to bring excellent service to customers here in the federal marketplace.
We're going to come back to that a little bit later. I'd like to take a step back and talk about your dad.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about Raf's dad.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about your dad.
My dad, again, great man, passed away when I was young. I was 17. And actually, when that happened, it was a turning point because I was in, just started college, and, kind of ends your childhood and begins your adulthood very abruptly. And what I remember from my dad was do the right thing and a tremendous work ethic. And there's no shortcuts.
Yeah. You mentioned that it wasn't until later in life, looking back, that you could understand some of the impacts of losing your father at 17.
Sure.
And even some of the, want to say benefits, but there were some bright spots as well.
Sure.
Tell us about that.
Well, I think one immediate benefit was that I took care of myself better, physically.
How so?
I started, when I went to college, I was pretty, not a great athlete, but I was held my own. I was... But I just started running, started working out, and I still do that today. And I think it's because you see that your father, I wanted to be here for my kids.
Yeah. What else?
Made me a better father.
How so?
Well, because you want to take care of yourself and you want to cherish every moment because you never know when it's gone.
Yeah.
And I think every father wants to see their kids into adulthood and put them off in the right way.
Yeah. What's the hardest thing you've ever had to do?
Well, I think in business, when you take somebody's life in your hands, when you have to make a decision about promoting somebody, terminating somebody, making an abrupt change because you know it's the right thing, that's exceedingly hard.
Can you give us an example? Obviously, no names, but walk us through what that feels like and experiences.
One of the earliest times I remember it being exceedingly difficult, I had a woman working for me who was about my age, in my 30s at the time, exceedingly good worker, top performer, high work ethic. I found out that she was abusing her corporate credit card. And I found this out. Yet she was one of the top performers that I had. What I found out later was it wasn't that she was doing it, but one of her family members was doing it without her knowledge. And so having to go through with that, knowing that this was a good person, but yet had violated something that essentially is a code of ethics, you have to come to grips with that.
So you had a face-to-face conversation with her?
Absolutely, several.
And tell us what happened.
Ultimately, we had to terminate her. After that, I took it upon myself to provide recommendations for her after that. But I always feel that when those situations happen, if you labor over them, if you do the right thing, they become obvious.
In the green room, you said that one of the reasons you like working for a small business rather than a large business, and you were with AT&T for 15 years. Had a good time there.
Yeah.
Is you're closer to everything.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Your decisions affect the good things or the not-so-good things that happen to your company.
Why is that so important to you?
Because I think that you have a sense of accomplishment. You know that you have many people who are in your charge. You want to do the best for them. You want to do the best for your firm. You want to see that what you do actually day to day makes an impact.
What legacy would you like to leave? In business and or on this earth?
That I was a good and loyal friend. That I was, my work ethic and my integrity was unmatched.
Would you please give us the web address for FACIL?
It's www.phacil.com.
Fantastic. We've been speaking with Tom Shoemaker. Tom's the president and chief operating officer of FACIL Incorporated. I'd like to thank my co-host, Dondi Saunders of Clifton Larson Allen, for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders like Tom. And we will be right back in just a moment after this important business spotlight.
This is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is
Gordon Bernhardt.
Gordon, what is Bernhardt Wealth Management?
Bernhardt Wealth Management is a registered investment advisory firm. We're one of the top independent wealth management firms in the Washington, D.C. area.
What makes your company special?
I'd say three things. One is that we are a personal chief financial officer. We act in that capacity for our clients, so that means we help them address their investment issues. We also focus on the holistic approach, so that means we focus on wealth enhancement, wealth transfer, wealth protection, and charitable planning issues for our clients. Second area is that makes us special is that we are a registered investment advisor. We don't have a broker's license, and that simply means that we have a fiduciary duty to always act in our client's best interest. Most of the industry have broker's licenses, and some of them have advisory licenses. And a broker is held to a suitability standard. We're held to the fiduciary standard.
So what that means to a customer would mean that you work in their interest, not for the interest of the stock that you're trying to sell.
That is correct. And the third area that makes us special is that we have a very academic approach to investing. Everything that we recommend to our clients is strictly based on academic research.
And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I love helping clients. You know, I'm passionate. I get satisfaction out of knowing that we touch people's lives. We can then, you know, our role is basically free up their time so they can focus on what's important to them. For some of our clients, that means their family and grandkids. For some, it's their business. And others, it's their charitable interests. We solidify their relationships in those areas.
Great. How can someone reach you?
We can be reached by phone at 703-356-4380 or on the web at bernhardtwealth.com.
Great. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and we've been speaking with Gordon Bernhardt from Bernhardt Wealth Management, and this has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dondi Saunders, of CLA, Clifton Larson Allen. And it's our pleasure to introduce our final guest of the day. His name is Phil Panzarella. Phil's a return guest, by the way. And Phil is the founder, president, and CEO of CPS Professional Services. So welcome back to the show, Phil, and tell us what's CPS Professional Services.
Thanks, Mike. I'm glad to be here. I just want to let you know, CPS Professional Services is a management consulting firm that specializes in helping government customers solve difficult problems through a number of technologies and methods called process improvement performance management.
Can you give us an example of a problem you guys are solving?
I will tell you, right now we're doing an awful lot of work with the United States Army, and we have people in theater helping on some of the retrograde activity from a logistics perspective and helping to create more efficient and effective processes.
So that means what exactly?
Well, moving equipment in and out of theater is kind of what it's up to, and it's how do you do it in the best and the smartest and most effective way.
You are an SDVOB. What does that mean?
SDVOSB, we are a small business by government standards, and we're a service-disabled, veteran-owned small business as a result of my affiliation with the military.
Got it. How big or how small?
Well, you know what? From a government perspective, we are technically a small business. We have about 42 people. I don't consider us small. We may have a few employees, but we actually are big in stature, and we deliver the same quality of services that most of our competitors and large firms do.
Now, you said that you never grew up thinking you'd run a business, own a business. What happened?
You know, I never really thought about it as doing it. I always enjoyed being part of larger corporations, and I think it came to a point where, you know, there's some lessons learned that you want to implement, you want to grow, and you want to get the opportunity to develop your own ethos in your own organization. And so I decided in 2006 to go out on my own and start my own business.
Yeah, you mentioned that some of those lessons were learned from your dad. Tell us about your dad. And where are you from?
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm from South Plainfield, New Jersey, exit 10, if you know where that's at. And, you know, so I was born and raised there, and I came from a family of three brothers. And we always had an extended family because my mom's dad and his brother lived with us from the time I was a little kid. And my dad never really got past the eighth grade and started his own company. So I got a great work ethic from watching dad.
Your dad started his own company?
Yes, he did.
What kind of company?
He was mostly in construction and excavation. And so he was building houses and doing those kinds of things.
Were you ever involved with the company growing up?
I was definitely involved. Every summer, it was always manual labor, but it was a blast. I mean, I had so much fun. I learned so much from my dad. He always gave us the opportunity to go out there and learn and to do other things. And he always made it a requirement that, you know, if you were going to buy your own car as, you know, three boys, you know, we didn't have a lot of money. Dad did pretty well for himself in developing the business, but he always made a requirement that we had to, you know, buy our own cars, pay for insurance, and do all those kinds of things. So the only way to do that was going out and working hard.
Was it okay with all of you guys to have this extended family and all these people in the home, or is that a pain?
No, I think it was absolutely. I think we learned a lot from that. It was a give and take, and I learned that you got to give back and take care of people. Family was very important, so it created a whole set of. I think it helped develop character for us all.
I understand you ate a lot of frozen food and like microwave stuff.
Well, I'll tell you what, not growing up, I tell you what, it was always home style. I come from an Italian background. We have pasta Thursday and Sundays, and what a blast. I mean, anybody ever came to the house, we always seemed to have enough food to, you know, no matter who came. We always had more than enough.
You have a commitment to community service, and you had said something in the green room about always making it back for dinner. Do those two connect?
Well, you know, not always. You know, I will tell you that when it comes to work-life balance, I'm not a very good person at being able to balance both. I try to do my best, but I truly believe that, you know, I heard, you know, somebody was asking me what I do and why I do what I do and giving back, and they said, they summed it up with live, learn, earn, and return. And I always believe it's a duty for all of us to give back.
I'd like you to repeat that. Say it again, please.
Live, learn, work, earn, and return.
Okay, well, one more time, slowly.
Live, learn, earn, work, and return.
What does that mean?
It means that, you know, you're going to live your life, you're going to learn as much as you can from the people around you, you're going to work hard, but at the end of the day, you're going to give back. And that's what the life cycle is being able to give back to those who need our help.
Is an example of giving back maybe having your daughter here in the studio with you, and she happens to work for you right now?
Well, I'll tell you, giving back, I think she's a great professional, and she's learned an awful lot on her own. And she, you know, so giving back and... she gets to see what I do, and hopefully that, you know, she tries to emulate some of those same things that I learned from my parents. And to give you an example, she's on a number of young professional boards in the same kinds of organizations that I am in giving back.
What's her name?
My daughter's name
is
Kristen.
Kristen.
Yeah.
Why West Point? You went to West Point, and we learned from our previous guest, Larry Besterman, that you were both in the same company as plebes.
Yeah, Larry Besterman's a great friend. He's a good guy. He's a great role model. And I'll tell you, we learned an awful lot. And some of the bonds that you develop as going through 4 years at the military academy never get broken.
Why West Point, though, just in the beginning?
I will tell you that I grew up in my high school days, I had Marine Corps ROTC, and so I really got to get associated with the military. I was playing sports, and then I heard about West Point. They interviewed me to come up to the academy, and from then on, it was, you know, I wanted to give back. I wanted to serve my country.
Tell us about the first experience, maybe the man you worked under when you graduated from West Point.
I will tell you, somebody once asked me what was the most memorable experience that you had from a leadership experience, and I will tell you, it was clearly I got my first command as a first lieutenant in the United States Army, and I was in Fort Lewis, Washington, and my commander was at that time Colonel Jack Keane, who then became the vice chief of the United States Army. And he taught us so much about leadership and about excellence, and at that point in time, there was a book called In Search of Excellence that just had come out by Peters and Waterman, and I clearly believe that we were living that book day in and day out, and I truly believe that Colonel Jack Keane at that point in time could have written the book.
We ask this question of Larry. We're going to ask it of you. Well, what's the big deal with West Point leadership? Isn't that like every other kind of leadership?
No, I will tell you that, you know, I'm obviously a little biased, but I will clearly tell you, when it comes to leadership, I do not believe there's a better institution when it comes to training men and women of character. And I think the Military Academy does an excellent job through the program that it has and through the people that it attracts. And I think it truly, all the other academies do a great job. But I tell you, when it comes down to the human element and being able to lead people and men and women, the United States Military Academy is first bar none.
Can you give us an example of perhaps your most significant, meaningful leadership moment?
Well, you know, I will tell you that I think, you know, I don't know if there's any one that I could point out, Mike, clearly, but I think there's been a number of them, and I think one of them is just starting this company. You know, you get to be very intimate with the people. You get to understand their families. And I think Larry brought up in an earlier conversation that always letting people go if you have to. I mean, those are the hardest things that you have to do. But I will also tell you that I have the opportunity to give back. And so my community involvement is really, you know, you talk about a work-life balance. I probably spend a lot more time helping wounded warriors and soldiers and their families and giving back than I do with my job sometimes, and it becomes a challenge.
Do you have a specific story there to tell us?
You know, I do. I got involved with Easter Seals. I am the chairman of the board. I was only with Easter Seals about 2 years before I became chairman of the local board. And that's kind of, you know, atypical, but only because I had this passion that I truly believe that wounded soldiers and their families need to be taken care of. And there's no better institution in my mind than an organization like Easter Seals. So I took on the mantle through the chairman of the local board here to be able to do that. And one specific example, we had a caregiver training training program that Easter Seals was responsible for delivering for the VA. And we went to the first pilot program, and they went around the room, and the 14 spouses that were there, one was a parent, two were males, and the rest were females. And the first woman that stood up said, my husband is a triple amputee, and I've got five kids. And I'm like, we are not doing enough to take care of this population. So my shared consciousness about helping them became even more fervent.
In the green room, we asked Kristen, your daughter, to describe you, and she said, my dad is selfless. How so? Now, you've given us some good examples, but I'm putting you on the spot here to talk about yourself in that regard.
You know, I tell you that I am actively involved and with Wounded Warriors and their families, and I'm involved with American Freedom Foundation, the Fairfax Chamber of Commerce, Easter Seals, and I don't say that because I'm bragging, but I think all those three entities are all tied together and connected, and I'm trying to help them all see the value of helping wounded soldiers and their families. So American Freedom Foundation raises money for wounded soldiers, and it gives to Easter Seals to help develop their programs. Chamber of Commerce is doing job employment, right? So now we're trying to find homes and jobs for veterans working with the United States Chamber of Commerce. So to me, it's all connected, and so I'm working very hard to make that a reality.
Yeah. I notice on your left ring finger that you have your wedding band and your, I'm assuming, your West Point class ring. And I've noticed people do that. Can you tell us what that means?
Well, you know, Mike, I'll tell you what. I think, you know, I learned an awful lot from the military academy, and and it's always our mission to give back. And, you know, my wife is the love of my life. She's my childhood sweetheart. We've been married 33 years.
Wow.
And she accompanied me every step of the way through my military career.
Yeah.
And, you know, and obviously West Point's very important to me, and I'm very affiliated with West Point to this day. I think, you know, when you see a classmate, even if you have not seen them in 10 years, it's like you have not missed a beat. It's like you saw them yesterday.
Yeah, we saw that in the green room when you walked in and Larry was there. Well, what was it like to see somebody from the old company?
Well, you know, Larry's a great friend, and I try to keep in touch with him. But it's like those memories, they're very vivid in your mind because there's a shared consciousness about what the military has taught people.
What would you say your wife would say about supporting a husband in the military?
You know, I tell you what, I think, you know, the spouses are probably the unsung heroes in the careers of military people because they actually put up with an awful lot from the travel, from the days away from home, from the theater deployments. Not that I have had the opportunity to be in Iraq and Afghanistan from that perspective, but these spouses, you know, in the past and today and in the future, spend an awful lot of time, you know, making sure that the home is taken care of.
What does your dad think about his son, Phil?
You know, I will tell you what, that I, you know, Larry talked about his dad when he told him he might have the opportunity to go to West Point. Well, my dad was the same way. My dad carried my picture around in his wallet, and I said, Dad, you know what? You have two other sons. I said, I'm embarrassed, and you got to put their picture in your wallet as well. He was so proud of the fact that I could go to West Point.
Would you give us the web address, please, for CPS Professional Services?
Sure, be glad to, Mike. www.cps-ps.com.
Give it to us one more time. I don't want anybody to miss it.
www.cps-ps.com.
Fantastic. We've been speaking with Phil Panzarella. Phil's the founder, president, and CEO of CPS Professional Services. I'd like to thank all of our guests today, including Lonnie Taylor, Managing Director of Diversified Search, Larry Besterman, President and CEO of TWD and Associates, Tom Shoemaker, President and Chief Operating Officer of Facile Incorporated, and of course, most recently, Phil Panzarella, Founder, President, and CEO of CPS Professional Services. I'd like to thank my co-host, Don D. Saunders of CLA, that's Clifton Larson Allen, for helping me with the interview. We'd also like to thank the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce for hosting us. More than anyone else, we'd like to thank you, the listening audience. If it were not for you, we would not even have a radio show. So thank you very much for listening. This has been your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions. And before you go, don't forget to visit us on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.